Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be focusing on Hoshea Perek Yud, the 10th Perek of Sefer Hoshea. We're now in the section where Hoshea is describing the imminent destruction which is going to be coming upon Shomron in the north, and this is all to happen. So it's interesting as well just to consider the fact that even though the people of the Shomron in the north did not believe him at the time that he was talking about this, then nonetheless, the people of the south certainly witnessed all of these prophecies come into actual real fruition. So there's two sections to our perek. It starts from Pasuk Aleph to Ches is the first section, separated by a paragraph. And the summary of this section is the following. Then we're going to focus on one or two ideas. It starts off by talking about how Israel is Gefen Bokek Yisrael, is this empty vine, which has no fruit in it. It's just standing there. And the way it's described is that the land of Israel has all these altars all around of it, but they will all be destroyed. Meaning to say, it's sort of like, you know, there was all this place of service, but it's all empty now. When the enemy comes in, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that we will realize and admit that we are wrong, but their king won't, and their king can't help them. Unfortunately, we brought it upon ourselves. It is interesting that it describes in this section how we will mourn, or the nation of Israel will mourn, they're going to mourn on the agalim, their calves which are taken away when they believe their agalim were power. And in fact, it's going to be that even their idols, their agalim, their calves which they had to serve in Shomron will be taken with them, embarrassingly enough, to as a tribute to Assyria. At this point in time, Hashem says, "Nidmer Shomron Malkoke Ketzef al Pnei Hamayim," that your king will look like a bubble over water, and all the places of worship will be desolate and covered with thorns to cover up the embarrassment. That's the end of the section. So a few points to focus on over here. Just one point is that what is this bubble above water that the king of Shomron is supposed to be like? So Malvin points out that when you watch water boiling, when you put a lot of energy into the water, it boils vociferously, and it generates bubbles. But the moment that the temperature simmers down, there's no longer bubbles. And he says the people are, so to speak, the water. And and at this point in time, certainly at the end of the period of the Northern Kingdom, it is king after king, king killing king, killing king. And very few years without another assassination and another king being appointed in their stead. Very little continuity. So it's sort of like the people are in heat, they're in turmoil, and they're yielding bubble after bubble, but none of them are long-lasting because they keep popping until it simmers down again and then boils again. And that's what that's the pattern, that's the imagery we're getting over here. In general, the one point in flow over here is that you will notice that actually this paragraph, the first section of Perek Yud, is actually a continuation of the two paragraphs in Perek Tes. It's the third of this section, where each of these three sections, Perek Tes A, Perek Tes B, and Perek Yud A, essentially, are three of this triplet, and each one of them starts talking about how Israel is likened to a vine, but it's described as just being destroyed at the end. So this is the third of that section, where we talk about Gefen Bokek Yisrael, in that term of the imagery. The last section of this perek runs from Pasuk Tes to the end of the perek in Tes Vav. And this talks about the history of our problems. In this section, Hoshea accuses Israel of saying that from the times of Giva, we've always been sinning. We couldn't win the war against Binyamin because of their own sins, and Hashem brought every nation against them. Then he turns about and says an interesting thing. He says, you know, Ephraim, you're like you're like an egla melumada, like a young calf who's trying to learn, who ohavti lodush. You want to keep threshing. Vani ovarti al tuv tzavoro arkiv Ephraim yachrosh Yehuda yashaded lo Yaakov. And I want to make it learn how to plow with Yaakov, and that you should ziru lachem litzdaka kitzru lofi chesed. I want you to plow and to seed goodness, charity. Niru lachem near. Start plowing. Ve'es lidroshes Hashem, to find Hashem. Ad yavoy v'yoret tzedek lochem, until you'll see the righteousness. But the problem is, charashtem resha, you kept on plowing evil. And because of that, at this point in time, I'm going to bring about your destruction. V'kom sha'on ba'amecha v'kom yitzarecha yushad. I'm going to bring this sha'on against your people, and they're going to destroy you like the shod, like the looting of Shalman in the place of Beis Arbel. So it will be with your king, Bashachar, Nidmo, Nidmo, Melech Yisrael. Will be like that in the mornings we like the king of Israel. Very enigmatic psukim. 3 points to focus on over here. The beginning of the section, if you're looking at Pasuk Yud to Yud, test to Yud, you'll notice that there's the comparison that all these things start at the times of Giva. What is that referring to? So we go back to the end of Sefer Shoftim. There's the episode was called Pilegesh BeGiva, where Binyamin has a terrible incident which occurs where some of the people in Giva rape a particular woman, this is Pilegesh, and they are brought to justice by the other 11 tribes of Israel. But the when they wage war against Binyamin, for the first 2 days, they lose a monstrous amount of people. They lose almost 40,000 people in their battles in the first 2 days, and Binyamin stays strong until the third day when Binyamin is conquered. And so the argument over here is why is it that Israel had to lose? After all, surely they were searching out justice. Why did they lose in the first battles? So the argument that's being made by Hosea is because they already had, they were B'nai Avla, they already had sin with them. The tribes of Israel were harboring in the mountains of Ephraim already a shrine called Pesel Micha, which was the previous section in Sefer Shoftim, the penultimate section of Sefer Shoftim. And what he's essentially saying is that yes, because you yourselves had so many stains on your own clothes, you can't go and exact judgment from others who had problems with them themselves. First, sort yourself out first. And that was the argument, meaning to say, you over here are not going to be able to fight your enemies, Israel, because like the Israel fighting Giver, even though your enemies may have problems, but you yourselves are still carrying baggage. You can't fight. You can't have Hashem on your side that way. That's what seems to be going on over here, and that's what Rashi explains. The middle section of this little paragraph is this sort of this plowing episode. What's the deal with this plowing? What's going on over here? If you focus on the psukim, which are Yud Aleph to Yud Beis, you'll see this whole plowing episode. So the Malbim says, just so incredibly, the Malbim is always on such clear incandescent mark over here, and he says that there's two activities described here. There is really plowing and threshing. Plowing requires a lot of effort. It requires a ox or a cow pulling essentially a peg which is inserted into the ground, and when it exerts its force, it pulls that peg through the ground, which upturns the ground and sort of shakes it up and allows the seeds to be sown into the ground, and now the nutrients and the lower soil is revealed for the seeds to grow in. The problem is that it requires a lot of effort. There's another activity called threshing, which is dash. Dash is when you already have the seeds, you already harvested, you put them on the ground and a board is placed, a grooved board is placed over them, and a donkey or a cow or pulls a person or a weight over standing on that board, and it crushes the seeds, allowing it to split the chaff from the actual seeds. The easy activity, says the Malbim, is clearly threshing, not the plowing. What happens is, yeah, you have Ephraim, who is this young calf, but the problem is it wants to get its food easily. It wants to earn its keep by doing threshing. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, that's not how it worked. No, not how it works. In order to really be part of this, my team, says Hashem, you need to learn how to plow again. You need to learn how to put a lot of effort. You need to invest in your spiritual life, in Torah, in mitzvahs, in finding Hashem. And he says, I want to plow with you and your Yehuda together. I want to reunite the kingdom in service of Hashem. That's what he wants to do. But, unfortunately, Charashtem, You plowed evil. Very sad element over here. The last little point to focus on with this, we close today, is the story of this place of Sha'on, of the arrival of Sha'on and Shalman to Beit Arbel. In the second last parak of this parak, it describes that you're going to be destroyed like this case of when Sha'on arrives in and loots the place of Beit Arbel. The Mepharshim debate what this is, but clearly, as the Da'at Mikra points out, this was an episode which is well known for its atrocity at the times, which Hosea is marshalling to sort of create the emotional impact over here. And that is that there must have been an arrival of a king whose name was Shalman, who came to the place of Beit Arbel, and it sounds like he killed the mothers. He killed the mothers in front of their children in this place, even though they were offering peace. It was a terrible, terrible massacre which occurred, which could have been avoided, and that's how it's going to happen to you. So he's marshalling this story. There's a debate in the Mepharshim who Shalman is. Is he Shalman Neser, who was one of the Assyrian emperors, or was it Salman of the king of Moab, who's a brutal king? We hear about similar episodes also in Amos. And Beit Arbel is also debated as to where it is. Generally accepted is it's a Jewish town in the area of Afula today, in the area of Yisrael, the Yisrael Valley. So we're talking about something which people would know. And finally, this flips back to the king of the Jews, or the king of Israel, who in the Shachar is going to be destroyed in a similar way, and that refers to Hosea ben Elah, who in the early time of his rule is going to be betrayed and ultimately rendered useless to the cause. This ends this section of the destruction prophecy of Hosea, and we move on to the closing part in Yod Aleph soon. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.